Blog Talk Radio. So to me, it's really interesting to see the Undisputed Era being one of the focuses of the USA Network version of this show. Dominik Dijakovic versus Keith Lee was the next plug for the next week. And now, fourth time's a charm. Tom Stauff, are you here with us?
And we're live, pal. How's it going, Greg?
Isn't that the truth? Yes, we are live. Anything can happen here on Wrestling Night in America, just like anything can certainly happen in WWE. So Tom is here with us. If you missed my intro, Tom is NXT specialist on PWTorch.com. He's one of the co-hosts of PWT Talks NXT Daily Cast. And Tom, I want to compliment you here right off the bat, because when I read your NXT spoiler results in the Torch newsletter for when they do tapings in at Full Sail, I know you attend a lot of those. It's a pleasure to read. The wording, the phrasing, the flowery language that you use in those is it sticks out to me. And you know, I, as a writer myself, I can appreciate that kind of thing. So that's really cool that you do that and you provide that for the Torch and for the readers. So I want to tell you how much I do appreciate reading your result that you send in.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very high praise, especially because I hack it all out from right there sitting in the bleachers while it's happening in front of me. And now that we're
Yeah.
live every Wednesday, I'll have to find
That's the other thing for,
other avenues.
you know, yeah, for how detailed it is. I mean, that's got to be tough to do when you're there live.
Yeah, it really is. I can say that there have been one or two things over the couple of years I've been doing it that I've gotten wrong. Thankfully, only one match result. There was a really quick roll-up one time, and I mixed it up. But for the most part, yeah, I feel like I've done okay. So thank you so much. That really really means a lot.
Yeah. I'll backtrack a little bit to some of the things we talked about earlier on in the show, and I know you missed some of this, but first of all, the rating. 1.179 million viewers for the hour of NXT on USA Network on Wednesday, and I kind of want to gauge what you think about that. Was that in the ballpark of what you were expecting on the high end, low end? What was your reaction when that number came out?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, it was really hard to gauge what to expect. I think the baseline, if I remember correctly, the USA show that they had about 2 years ago, a little bit less than 2 years ago, where they already had it taped and they didn't do anything special for it. It was decided after the fact, after they had already done the taping, that they were just going to take what was going to be the WWE Network show and air it on USA. If I remember correctly, that got 800,000, which we don't know what the network numbers are, but sounded pretty good for something that wasn't too heavily promoted and definitely wasn't anything too special. It was just a little novel thing. They didn't put anything of note on that particular episode for the occasion. So, being slightly optimistic but not wanting to take too much of a risk, I was guessing 900,000. So, getting well above that seems like pretty darn good news to me. And I think it creates a healthy baseline moving forward. So yeah, I think it was good news, if not blow me out of the water, great news.
So I talked also a little bit about what that means, like for the 2 hours, you know, because obviously this is likely to be a high water mark for the show, although they have advertised a couple things ahead of time, so we'll see what impact that has on the ratings. But when you look at the show going for 1 hour on USA over the next two last week and then this week, and then moving full time to 2 hours. What's your expectation for how they're going to be able to hold the audience? You know, this is an audience. If it's people who've watched NXT on the WWE Network, they're used to NXT being 1 hour in length on the network. You know, is by the time Wednesday rolls around, is it just going to be too much WWE programming after 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown to ask people to sit for 2 hours? Is it going to be people checking out the first hour and then saying, well, when they post it on WWE Network tomorrow or whenever, I'll check out the second hour? So what's your expectation for how the show is going to be able to hold that audience for 2 hours?
That's an excellent question. I think the novelty factor is in strong effect right now, and it also has the benefits of strong promotion on Raw and SmackDown. This is subjective. I personally think they're doing an excellent job promoting it. The ads have been exciting, and commentary on Raw and SmackDown are talking about it more. So it's definitely something that's present in people's minds, even if they didn't watch NXT before. So I would expect a similar rating for this coming week. And then, of course, once they're head-to-head with AEW, that's going to get eaten into quite a bit. But right now, I think it's such a novelty to be able to say that you were there watching the first live episodes in what could be quite a milestone in the current era of wrestling, something that we'll be talking about for years and years to come. So I think people are interested in that factor for sure. So yeah, I think I would expect a somewhat similar number, especially because I don't think I've heard a single person really trash the show. Like everybody seemed, everyone that I've heard from anyway, seemed really high on it.
And if you missed this in the intro, 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you want to talk to me and Tom about NXT's debut on USA. If you want to talk about happenings on Raw and SmackDown that we'll get to a little later on in the show, make sure to press 1 if you do want to talk, and you'll show up in the queue. If not, if you want to call in and just listen, hey, that's okay too. We've also got email, wnialivecast@gmail.com, where you can send any questions you have for us. Now to get to the meat of the show, we had Triple H doing the intro, and I can see this from both sides here. You know, Triple H being the first person you see if you're a viewer on the USA Network watching NXT, and I could feel the eyes roll of a lot of fans who were watching at home. On the other hand, you know, he got the crowd pumped up. He's sort of the wizard behind the curtain in NXT. And I think a lot of people appreciate him for it. So there might be a lot of people who said, yeah, you know, take a bow, man, for what you've done with this brand and for the hours of entertainment you've given us and for putting it on the USA Network, making it more accessible. Sure, go ahead. So where did you fall on Triple H being the first person NXT viewers saw on the USA Network?
You know, I thought it was the right move. Every major milestone like this, not storyline wise, but just presentation wise, that NXT has gone through under Triple H's watch, he's been there, standing in the middle of the ring in Brooklyn. You know, he's that's just a prominent example. He's always there. I want to say he was there at Arrival at the beginning, but it's been a thing with him. But the two notable. Well, of course, he's very good at it. Like you said, he hypes up the crowd. He's excellent at doing that. But I think the two most notable things are that he didn't overstay his welcome, number one. He got right out of there and gave way to Io Shirai right away. And B, they did not use main roster talent for the rest of the show. I think everybody, including myself or most people, were expecting people to show up in the crowd, like, oh, look, Kevin Owens came down and he's hanging out, or whoever else, or maybe somebody would, an active wrestler would come down and wrestle a match, or say that they are on NXT now, and they didn't do that. They restrained themselves. So I think that this was a good positioning for Triple H to get that familiar face with that gravitas in front of the crowd right away as a transition for people who are unfamiliar with the product, but he got right back out of there and let the product speak for itself after that.
The first match was Candice LeRae defeating Bianca Belair, Mia Yim, and Io Shirai to become the number one contender to the NXT Women's title. Really good match. Went about 100 miles an hour. Got in a lot of spots and you know, for the time they were given here. Couple of questions here. What do you think about Candice LeRae winning this over some legitimate challengers there in that match? And what did you think about the placement of the women as the first match of the NXT product on USA? Was that a statement, do you think, by Triple H and by NXT, or was it just the right match to lead off the show with, regardless of whether it was USA or the network?
I think the former could be a possibility for sure, but I actually lean more towards the latter, that it was the right match at the right time, because they were raring to go out there and put on 10 minutes of solid nonstop action with their robust personalities. Each of those four women shine in different ways, and having Io Shirai in particular be the first one to come out with her new cool entrance, I think was really attention grabbing. And when you are trying to pack so much content onto that first hour that is trying to tell new viewers what NXT represents, putting out some strong personalities like that, since you can't tell a whole lot of story in that time, and you can't have them cut promos in that time, or you're not going to anyway, I think personality first was definitely the way to go, and that's the way that they went. So I was not anticipating it to open, because you would think that with them calling NXT No BS in their ad, that they wouldn't go with an unclean finish to start, and I was predicting that Rhea Ripley would get involved in the match. So I was not expecting it to go on first. I was very happy that it did, and then when it came to the clean result, I was personally very surprised that Candice LeRae went over, which is not a knock on her at all, and we've been clamoring for her to get into, at least over on PWT Talks NXT, we've been clamoring for her to get into title contention for a long time. But I thought that Io Shirai and Candice LeRae had absolutely no chance of winning the match, because they are still embroiled in a personal feud. So I thought that this was either going to be a return for Mia Yim, or what I felt was probably most likely was giving Bianca Belair that spot again. Even though we've already been there, done that with her, she is so darn good and at the top of what they do in NXT, that I figured they would want to, let's say, call an audible in what may have been their pre-planned storyline, and put Bianca out there right at the beginning to show people this is the best we got. So if you want to watch us, we're going to give you the best. But yeah, I think it's a fine spot for Candice, and I expect her to make Shayna Baszler look really, really good in Victory on October 2nd.
Has enough time elapsed, because I know you mentioned Bianca Belair possibly winning the match, and she did have a relatively brief feud with Shayna Baszler. Has enough time elapsed since then so that she would feel fresh, or do you think it would still feel like a repeat at this point?
That's a really good point. Speaking personally, I feel like it would be a bit of a repeat. Bianca Belair has just been kept on the back burner lately. They're still putting her out there in squash matches, but we don't know exactly what she is trying to accomplish. It wasn't until she got put in this contenders match that we got some inkling of an idea of where she might be going, or what her character's current mission statement might be. So yeah, personally, I feel like it would have been too much of a stale angle. And maybe that's why it was the smart move to not do that, because what NXT I think is doing really, really nicely, or at least what they did really nicely with this first show, is they are creating a new jumping on point for fans while still rewarding fans who have been watching all along with things like Undisputed Era fulfilling their prophecy. That's been a storyline we've been following for a while. But, and this might be a weird comparison to make, because I don't watch Doctor Who, but whenever I tell somebody who does watch it that I don't, they say, oh, well, however many seasons ago, they just kind of like started over again. You can go back and watch the really, really old silly stuff if you want, and we love it and it's great, but you don't have to. You can start at this jumping on point later on in the series. And I think that's what they are creating here. And that's a tricky balance. So maybe, giving us something fresh with Candice is the smarter decision.
And that's so important to make the product accessible to a wider audience, because wrestling is so hard to attract new fans. You know, it's such a unique product, but also, it's that 52 week a year season where there's no season finales. There's no season premiere where you can, jump into it and they kind of reset things or explain things for new viewers who are watching the first time. There is just, the assumption that if you're watching, you've always been watching, and the train keeps rolling along. So it's nice to see that NXT, at least in its first episode, is trying to be open to the new viewer and to sort of welcome them in an accessible way. So That, you know, that'll be something interesting to see going forward, you know, if that's still the case and if they do anything in the coming weeks that resembles that as well. The Undisputed Era had a backstage promo, really brief, but it helped to introduce them as major players within NXT, which I think you needed to do to set up what happened in the main event. Dominik Dijakovic versus Keith Lee was advertised for next week's show. I'm not going to ask you if you're looking forward to it, because I think that's probably a pretty strong yes. But what do you think about that being one of the teases for next week? I mean, I think that the ardent fans will love it because they know that the match quality is going to be there, and it's going to be two guys throwing their bodies around the ring in ways that you don't usually see two guys that size doing. But on the other hand, if you're a casual NXT viewer, if such a thing exists, you know, you see Dijakovic, who has been on and off and hasn't really gotten a consistent push. You see Keith Lee, who debuted with a lot of fanfare, but has really been lost in the shuffle for the most part. Are they in strong enough positions right now within NXT to really be a draw for the more casual viewers?
Yeah, I think this is something I'm going to be saying a lot for the next few weeks. I feel like NXT is in showcase mode right now, and this is, I think, a good pick for a match that, yes, we've already seen twice, but that they can put out there again without anyone who's already seen it complaining that we have to sit through it again, because they were great the first two times, just excellent chemistry with one another. So yeah, give it to us again. While at the same time, if somebody out there hasn't seen this yet, it's another card they can play to say, this is what you get when you tune into NXT. At the same time, it's at least over on our daily cast, we've been predicting quite heavily that Keith Lee is nearing a heel turn, and that wouldn't be nearly as impactful to a newer audience if they don't know who he is and what he represents before that. So here he is against Dijakovic, who seems to be a clear heel, and we can learn more about Keith Lee through this match. And if/when he turns, that can be, again, another card to play. I think that they're doing a lot right away with title matches and title contention and wrestlers from NXT UK invading and so on and so forth. But they still have a lot of cards to play, like the Bianca Belair thing, keeping that in their back pocket until more time has elapsed and she feels like a hotter card could be smart. And this like a Keith Lee heel turn is something they can keep in their back pocket, because that novelty factor that I mentioned is going to wear off, and it might wear off pretty quickly once AEW comes around. So they will need these cards to play to hook people in.
Do you see NXT using the USA Network show as a platform to push a new superstar? To push someone who, they've got a lot of people like Dijakovic, like Lee, who have that star potential but just haven't had a shot for whatever reason in NXT, maybe because it's only 1 hour a week of TV and there's only so much product you can put on there, only so many guys you can push on there. Now that they're going to be going to 2 hours, do you see them, using USA as a place to have someone break out? And do you see either Lee or Dijakovic being that person?
Yes, I do see it as a ground for that now. Lee and Dijakovic, not necessarily, because their size already fits into what Vince likes up on the main roster. Nothing against them. I've been impressed with Dijakovic since I started watching him. Lee was more new to me when he came to NXT, but it was a little rocky to begin with because he was one of those people they brought in without much of a mission statement right off the bat, but he's definitely proven himself. And I've even compared his work in the ring, the way he paces himself and the way he fires up, to a John Cena, which I think he can take as a pretty big compliment. So I feel like they are, I mean, sure, they could break out, but I don't think they need the NXT platform to do that. I look more toward people like Adam Cole or Johnny Gargano, who we've been worried about for so long. Or even someone like a Velveteen Dream, who he's tall, he's strong, he doesn't have the height, what would be considered a disadvantage in other rosters. with other people in charge. But due to his character, he could be framed like the exact same way that Tyler Breeze was when he went to Raw and SmackDown, and we saw how poorly that went. So I think this will provide a different place where people like Johnny Gargano or an Adam Cole in particular can thrive, and we don't have to bite our nails that this is all we get of them. And then once they go up to the main roster, they get the Chad Gable treatment of, you know, the best storyline they can get is that they're short.
Yeah. And I think that's something we'll touch on a little later on, actually. But as we continue with NXT on USA, we had Cameron Grimes defeating Sean Maluda in about 5 seconds. Grimes hit his finisher, and that was it. It was this NXT's way of showing fans that, hey, matches can end at any time? Or was this, you know, should we be reading more into the fact that it was Cameron Grimes who got this victory so quickly?
Yeah, I would look more at who it was than anything else. Just the way they paced out the rest of the show, I don't think they wanted to take away from the other two bookending matches of that first hour. And it was just a question of, do we do a video package? Do we do a promo? What's the most effective thing we can put out here? And I think having the runner-up in the breakout tournament come out and make a statement with a quick win like that, you know, I'm basically regurgitating Triple H's words, which he put so much spin on things that I want to raise my eyebrow at it. But in the days since that conference call that Kelly Wells recorded for us, I've come around on it. I think that it probably was a good call. If somebody just came out, if he came out and just said, like, I'm Cameron Grimes and I'm grimy and I want to beat people up, that might not have been as exciting. But having Mauro Ranallo go nuts over him and then have him get this this quick win, I think it makes people more curious about him and what other talents like him NXT has to offer. So I think they used the time as best as they felt they could, and probably to success to pique people's interest.
A Damian Priest vignette was next, and I thought this was really interesting because they didn't. And this was something people levied as a bit of a criticism, is there wasn't enough video packages, there wasn't enough introductory pieces to show off who these wrestlers are. And Damian Priest got one. And, you know, we talked about the Undisputed Era promo, and there were very scant opportunities for these video packages, and Damian Priest got one. I would say that's a good sign for him. That it made the USA Network version of the show. And I've been really impressed with him early on in his run. I love the Damian Priest name, which is not something I can say about a lot of the recent renames in NXT. And, you know, I think he's a guy who is going to be really impressive in this USA Network era of NXT.
Yeah, I think the new characterization is definitely a work in progress. They keep putting him out there, but he's still against that issue with the mission statement that I'll keep coming back to. We don't know what he's all about. And since he's a mysterious character, we don't need to know what he's all about. But as of right now, we know next to nothing. We know he likes to hang out in nightclubs, and we know he calls himself the Archer of Infamy, but we don't know what that really means. And he's already changed the setup to his finisher, and he's still maybe I shouldn't criticize him for not getting his new arrow, his bow and arrow taunt right, because he's actually gotten it right the past couple times that I've seen him. And you know, far be it for me to criticize Punishment Martinez, but I think the transition into the Damian Priest character has, if not been rocky thus far, it's not been a perfect click right away. But yes, absolutely, it stood out to me that not only was he somebody that they highlighted in a video package, but he was somebody that they gave a win in a dark match before the show, which tells me again, it's a card they're keeping in their back pocket. They think highly enough of him that if he wasn't going to be on this first show, they at least wanted to put him out for the crowd and give the audience a bit of a tease as to who he is. And I think what we need now is more video packages. I mean, gun to my head, I would say that they'll probably give him a squash match this coming Wednesday. But what I personally think would be wise would be more video packages that give us a bit more of a hint, if not a full essay, but more of a hint as to
who he is and what he represents, so we can frame it better and know how to feel about him when we do see him come out and inexplicably squash people.
I think if there's one criticism I have of the character, it's a little bit too much like Aleister Black. I kind of get that sense. And so it does feel like a little bit of a knockoff of that. But that's, you know, there's plenty of time for him to kind of grow out of that and grow out on his own. He's been got limited airtime, I would say, in NXT. So I think when he gets more time, that's what we'll see. The main event of the first hour on the USA Network was Roderick Strong defeating Velveteen Dream to win the North American title. There was interference. There was rough bumps. There was all that stuff that NXT promised we wouldn't get in the commercials before this show. So, you know, Strong and Dream, they put on a good match. I know people saw this as somewhat of a limitation of Velveteen Dream for his work in this match. Ending the first show with a big title change, the Undisputed Era now, you know, you talk about fulfilling that prophecy. What did you make of the ending with the ref bumps and with the interference and things like that? I mean, there had to be some discussion in the booking meetings about, is this the kind of finish we want to do in the main event of our first show versus, hey, we got to get the title on the Undisputed Era and get them some heat, and this is a way to do it.
Yeah, so I'm definitely with you in that I was not anticipating, if I'm reading what you're saying correctly about your own predictions about it, I'm with you that I was not anticipating any kind of shenanigans, even though it's easy to predict that on a TV show when the Undisputed Era is involved. But this is the kind of match that likely would have been a takeover match, and takeover very rarely gives us shenanigans, even when a heel who usually wins it through cheap means is going over. So I was thinking that we would get a clean win, and I think in what is now the bygone era of NXT, we would have gotten that. But I actually ended up really being in favor of the choice they made here, because, again, I'm just thinking about it in the sense of introducing it to a new audience, and you are put in the position of wanting to have that big title change on your first live show, that big news item. That then, of course, rolls into Undisputed Era fulfilling their prophecy that they've been talking about literally all year long. But you also want to get over one of your biggest baby faces in Velveteen Dream, and you want to get over your biggest bad guys in the Undisputed Era. So I think they accomplished the trifecta by having a drawn-out match that was a bit more meticulous than I was anticipating, especially with Roddy involved. But it was fine. It was good. It was engaging. It definitely got the crowd engaged. It was the hottest reactions of the night when Dream was resisting tapping out and kicking out of the first end of Heartache. But yeah, I think then when O'Reilly and Fish, and I don't know if anybody distracts a ref better than Kyle O'Reilly does, but when they started distracting and Adam Cole hit the super kick, I think that they accomplished the trifecta of what they wanted to do with that match on this show. So I'm in favor of all of it.
So that was the end of NXT on USA. Then we had to turn to the network, and I know a lot of people had issues logging into the network for the beginning of that version of NXT this week. If you didn't get to see it live, you may have missed Pete Dunne defeating Arturo Huas in the first match of the second hour. You know, this was an interesting styles clash. I liked it. I like what Huas has been doing. You know, he's gotten some time in Evolve and things like that. Pete Dunne here, I thought, looked good. And, you know, what's your take on Dunne and where he fits in the current version of NXT versus where he fits in NXT UK? And how much crossover for him is there going to be between those two brands?
Yeah, real quick, I agree on Huas. He's been the main reason I've sort of kept my ears pricked as to what's going on with Evolve. Even though he loses all the time, I really enjoy his work, and I think he gets the best out of his opponents as well. So definitely a good matchup there. With Dunne, it speaks to what we saw a lot in that second hour, they saved the what I guess you could call the WWE Network cross promotion for that second hour that was going to be on the network for people who had the network. And done, you know, there's we're getting fluidity between these brands now, NXT, NXT UK, and 205 Live. And it's hard to know exactly what to make of it and where to draw the lines, which kind of makes it similar to the wildcard rule, where we don't really even know what matters and what doesn't, when and if it's supposed to be particularly impactful when a certain wrestler appears on a show that they're not supposed to be on. But I think there, whatever hazy line is drawn between them, we can have a situation like with Pete Dunne or like Rhea Ripley, where they finish up their storylines in NXT UK on one brand, and then they can come to another brand, and it's almost like a territory system. And it, I hesitate to even bring it up because it's not that, you know, in the territory system, a lot of the people in the crowd wouldn't have known that this Pete Dunne coming in just lost in a different territory, and that's how he exited, and we do know that here. We know that he lost to Walter, but he's okay. Forgive me if this sounds really weird, but this is the way I've been thinking of it. It's like you've got three bins of dyed water, like blue water, yellow water, and red water. And then you sort of tilt it one way, and the red water spills into the yellow. And you're like, oh, it's orange. It looks cool. And then you tilt it again, and it starts spilling again. It starts to look murky. So I think they need to be careful with it before the waters get too murky, and we just don't know what to make of anything. But as of right now, I think the lines are firm enough that it's still interesting to see Pete Dunne back in NXT with a new litany of opponents. Same with Rhea Ripley, and I know she's going into a program with Jazzy Gabbert now on NXT UK, so I'm not, you know, TBD exactly how much more she's going to do stateside. But yeah, I think there is still at least that level of intrigue in knowing that you know, he's a guy from the other territory, if you know what I mean. And if it sounds like I am struggling to talk about it, it's because I think WWE is struggling to figure out exactly what they want to do. So I'm figuring it out at the same time that I think the company is.
I totally understood that water analogy and yet have no idea how you came to that to explain it. So that's the best I can do for you on that. We move on now to Dakota Kai. We had a return vignette for her. She comes back from the injury that she suffered previously, and she'll be back next week. Xia Li defeated Aaliyah. And then we had Denzel Desjardins supposed to make his NXT television debut against Kushida. However, Imperium, our NXT UK group, came out and attacked Denzel. Walter ended up coming out and joining them. And then Kushida called out Walter. So, wow, that was not a match that I ever thought that I needed in my life, Kushida versus Walter. But, you know, Kushida's a guy who's kind of been floundering a little bit. Another guy like Keith Lee, who debuted and kind of almost immediately got lost in the shuffle. But, man, I really think Walter could be an opponent that he really opened some eyes against.
Yeah, this was the segment of the night for me. You know, I guess since we skirted over real quick on Xia and Dakota, I think highly of them. They're also popular names on our daily cast, so I'm glad that they're getting the spots they're getting. I think Dakota could be a much, much bigger deal coming off of the injury. She was fine before. She has her fans, but she didn't get great reactions. I don't think the fans cared about her as much. But anybody coming back from an injury, I think if they position her right, she could even go as high as being the person to finally take the title off of Baszler. But yeah, this Imperium thing was definitely the segment of the night for me. You know, talking about the blurring of the lines between these divisions here, these guys are definitely invading. They are not NXT US guys, but they're coming over to make the statement on this show and show – you know, what the broader WWE Network landscape has to offer with their, as they call it, in-ring product, or whatever that category is when you're searching for it on the network. And this was the big surprise. If anyone out there was predicting, like I was not, but if anyone out there is predicting we would get some representation for UK on this show, I don't think anyone was predicting that it would go all the way up to Walter, who recently said that he doesn't want to, he didn't say not working in the States. He said he didn't want to move to the States, but it's still, you know, it felt like, you know, he's a guy that we're only going to see across the Atlantic. So this was a big surprise to see him in person in the Full Sail Live studio. And perhaps even more significant than that to NXT US is, I knew I was going to go back to it, it's that mission statement thing again. Kushida has been completely free of any reason to care about him unless you followed him in NJPW and you know what heights he can reach. They have done a very poor job, I feel, of showing off what he's capable of in the ring. And it's not necessarily for lack of good opponents, but just lack of the way the matches went didn't really show off what he can do. And he's never said what he wants to accomplish. And so coming out and standing up to the invaders on NXT USA's behalf, I think, was the by far the biggest statement, if not the only statement we've gotten from him so far. And it'll be interesting to see who he selects to be by his side in, on Wednesday they're doing a 6-man tag. So Kushida gets to pick two partners to go up against, I was just assuming that it would be Walter, but now I'm thinking maybe it would make more sense for Walter to be on the outside. And again, that's a card in their back pocket that they can play and hold off.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that'll be a match to watch out for this Wednesday on NXT. We had Lio Rush returning to WWE via NXT, defeating Oney Lorcan for the Cruiserweight number one contender spot. And it can kind of get lost when you think of Lio Rush being the second to Bobby Lashley and, you know, working the crowd and working the mic and being a manager. And then you see him in the ring and you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot. This guy can really go. So that was nice to see him return in an in-ring role because he can be an asset in that role. More than that, though, is seeing a Cruiserweight number one contender match on NXT. Obviously, with the new taping schedule, with SmackDown moving to Fridays, the 205 Live situation still kind of up in the air, it seems. Do you expect the Cruiserweights to, if not move to NXT, then be a larger presence there going forward?
Yeah, it seems like they're part of the bleed over, and maybe it would be wise to at least feature them and maybe put Cruiserweight title matches on takeovers if takeovers are going to go a little bit longer. I think there's a possibility for that. 205. I think this is believing rumors that aren't super substantiated. I think it's just reading into things that Triple H has said selectively, but it does seem like its time is limited now that SmackDown's moving over to Fox. And, if that's the case, what better place for these guys to go than to NXT and in front of a crowd that's going to receive them as their work deserves to be received? It's adding a lot of extra stuff to what's already going to be a really packed 2 hours, including commercials.
Right.
But if it's going to give us matches like Oney Lorcan and Lio Rush, I'm going to have a hard time complaining about that because this was, for me, match of the night.
And then we had the main event, which was Matt Riddle versus Killian Dane. This went to a no contest when the locker room emptied, brawled throughout the Full Sail arena. There's a WWE.com exclusive after the show that noted General Manager William Regal made a rematch for next week on USA, Dane versus Riddle. And not only that, but the winner will become the number one contender to Adam Cole's NXT title. We've had this Riddle versus Dane match before that hasn't gone quite according to plan, and this is another one that seemed to involve most of the locker room here. So upping the stakes next week with Matt Riddle and Killian Dane, it seems to me this is the time to pull the trigger on Matt Riddle. I mean, do you see any way Killian Dane walks out as the number one contender?
Not at all, because this would that would of course put him in a heel match against Cole, and Riddle is someone who we on our daily cast have been championing as one of the potential biggest stars for the brand and moving into the Raw and SmackDown as well when that was part of the conversation, and we'll see how that continues to factor in the new landscape, but. This feud with Killian Dane really seemed like, or seems like, it is framed to put Riddle on a hero's journey in front of a wider audience. So when he does contend for the championship, more people care about where he's been and where he's going. My question is, when is this match going to be booked for? Because I keep on having to remind myself that they haven't said that the title match these guys are contending for will happen on the October 2nd show. I keep assuming that, but that's not the case. I think that we need to do a much longer story so we can get more of this Adam Cole being a sniveling villain for the USA audience. So it's a more satisfying when Riddle does win the championship, which I won't call a foregone conclusion, but we've definitely been saying on our daily cast for a long time that when he does work his way into title contention, he will win it in his first attempt, because he has that much star potential that I don't think they want to make him look like a loser on his first time out. So I'm definitely in favor of the direction, assuming they give it time to breathe. But if there was anything on this NXT show that I was down on, it was this segment, because it just came off as kind of goofy for me. I wasn't sure why everybody else was getting involved. And if they were getting involved, I'm not sure why giving the rewarding the behavior with a title shot on the line, why that is then going to prevent it from just happening again. So it seemed pretty messy to go off the air. And I also have no idea why they continue to do this thing where they put a major storyline development on as a social media exclusive rather than just keeping it on the show, especially when the show ended a few minutes before the hour. So that continues to baffle me. I guess they're trying to drive people to social media, since social media is marketing. But, yeah, this was the one part of the show that I was not as hot on, for those reasons.
And I do like the idea of finding another one, a new number one contender at the same time you're going to USA. That way that the wider audience can sort of be with this person during their journey from the beginning, you know, from the time that they get that number one contendership. It's not rehashing another feud. It's putting someone into that spot right as soon as they get on the USA Network. And I think that's kind of smart. And I think Matt Riddle's the right guy to do that with, because I think his personality works at a wider level, I think. So I really like that move. Tom, I know you were there live for this. I know you've talked at length in different podcasts about your live experience, so I won't quiz you too much on it, but I do want to ask you what you thought. You know, I know you've been here live before at these Full Sail tapings, but how different was everything from the anticipation of the crowd to the overall crowd reaction to, you know, the pacing of the show? How different was everything in that first hour compared to what you usually see for tapings?
Yep, it's a very good question, because I went in honestly expecting it to be somewhat similar, and it actually felt a lot different. There were some changes that they made to the stage. Obviously, they don't have a ramp anymore. The screen is bigger. They even cleaned up, like, this doesn't even show up on TV, but they cleaned up the production area. Not that it was a mess, but it looks nicer now. They gave commentary a new set. They changed the lighting schemes for the matches, and it all, and they got in a whole new sound system. So the music, it like when someone like a Mia Yim is coming out, it almost feels like a nightclub in there, because the bass is pounding.
That's cool.
You know, the lights are going off. It really felt completely different. I mean, that sounds like an extreme statement, but it felt so different being in there this time than being at the tapings. I didn't feel like the tapings were small beans before, but now I kind of look back like, oh wow, this first show, they really dipped into WWE's resources and got all the best stuff and really decided, you know, how do we want to present this aesthetically differently and give the crowd a more impactful experience. And I think they succeeded. When I watched the chopped up Hulu version after the fact to see how it did look on TV, I didn't notice as many of those changes visually. I didn't hear as many of those changes in how the crowd was mic'd or how the mat was mic'd or with the music. But at least being there in person, it definitely felt bigger. And I think, you know, one of my main takeaways was that as much as I enjoyed going to the tapings, there was still that sense of like, I'm going to every single one to cover it for the Torch. So when a taping rolls around, I'm like, all right, I got to go do that tonight. And I'm always happy when I'm there, but there was a little bit of it that felt like an assignment for work. And coming out of this, I'm legitimately excited to go back again on Wednesday and have that fun again. It was really cool.
Yeah. Excellent. Glad to hear that. We do have an email question about NXT, so we'll get to this one now. It says, hello, Greg and Tom. I have a bit of an odd question tonight. With NXT incorporating commercials for better or worse, what one element from Raw or SmackDown would you transfer to NXT, and what one element from NXT would you transfer to Raw or SmackDown? Is there anything either way? Also, ask Tom to discuss the story of Marina Shafir and Roderick Strong's son's new finisher, Bruce from Seattle. So, Roderick Strong and Marina Shafir's son's new finisher. What's the story on that?
Yep. Thanks, Bruce. Yeah. Roddy and Marina are very fun to follow on social media. I don't know. It's unrelated. I bumped into them recently. They were out at a restaurant with their son, and he's quite a character. They're lucky parents. And Marina Shafir posted in her Instagram story a screen capture of a text that Roddy sent her, saying that their son had just pulled some of the hair out of his head with his butt cheeks. And then if this is the Bruce that I think it is, we went back and forth on Twitter trying to figure out what that finisher should be called. You know, it was the little joke that I added that would be his finisher. But yeah, clearly they were roughhousing and some sort of situation occurred where Roddy lost a few follicles in the hind end of his little boy. So,
I see.
Yeah,
that I could understand how that could be painful as well.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So for the first part of the question. Yeah.
Yeah. The first part, is there anything that happens on Raw or SmackDown, any kind of, you know, maybe production detail or how they do things that you would add to NXT? And anything from, I mean, the first thing that strikes me about something that I would add, you know, take from NXT and put on Raw or SmackDown is, and this isn't necessarily production, but this is just how they do things, they're a lot more organic backstage with how they interview people. You know, they'll actually walk up to someone or, you know, if the camera's following somebody, there's a purpose. It's not as lazy as it is on Raw or SmackDown. So just off the top of my head, that's one thing that I would take from NXT and utilize on Raw and SmackDown to make things seem more organic. I think it's a lot more difficult coming up with something that Raw and SmackDown is doing better than NXT to the point where I would want to implement that on NXT.
And you know what? I believe that is my answer. It's a good enough question that I wish I had more time to think about it ahead of time, and I'll probably continue to think about it after the fact. But that is the first thing that stands out, that they will have press scrums, or they've even done press conferences. And the Full Sail setting doesn't necessarily lend itself to that, but it's an improvement. And they will be doing photo shoots backstage that get interrupted, or they will be showing something that happened earlier in the week at the Performance Center. The Performance Center has become like a living, breathing part of the NXT storyline.
Like that.
And Yeah, it's, I mean, I think that's one of the best things that they do. So I would recommend that over, you know, following a janitor for no reason that then Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon poke their heads in on for a recent egregious example. I think, you know, writing TV week to week is something that we may see NXT start to struggle with if they don't go forward with planned out arcs. If they, I mean, I don't know how they're approaching it. I would hope that they're continuing to write multiple weeks at a time and try to stick to a plan. But just not to completely echo the answer, that's another thing that occurs to me that would be wise for the main roster would be to stick with plotted out story arcs, because though we see them get dropped so often, just as we go week to week and things either get forgotten about or reframed or dropped entirely. And you know what? I'm thinking about Raw and SmackDown up and down here, and I can't think of a single thing. I mean, granted, NXT already apes Raw and SmackDown by design, so there's already so many things that are similar, but I don't think there's anything that they do that I would want NXT to implement.
Yeah.
When they went to commercial, I don't think, did they even do the spilling outside of the ring, like, oh, the action continues after the break? Did they do that?
I do think Mauro said NXT rolls on, which is a Michael Cole-ism, but that's right. Which is the announcers anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and granted, it was just the first show. It was really, really high energy, and hard to judge exactly how they'll continue as things move forward. But sitting there in the audience, I had no idea they had gone to commercial break. The you know, when I look back, I can think, okay, I guess they were moving a little bit slower here, or maybe they were giving themselves a bit of a rest there, maybe. But in the moment, there was no part of my mind that was thinking, oh, we got to be in commercial now.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that sticks in my mind about going from NXT to the main roster is just the way the announcers treat things, and they're not out there to bicker with each other and all that kind of stuff. They're a lot more professional sounding, which you like. So mm-hmm. that would be something that, but yeah, from Raw and SmackDown to NXT, I don't see anything that those two shows do so well and so much better than how NXT produces TV that I would want that to move there. There's nothing that I can think of right now off the top of my head. So, that's an interesting thought. I mean, like you said, I think that's something that I'd like to take a little more time to think about before I give a definite answer. But yeah, nothing off the top of my head. I do want to talk a little bit about Raw and SmackDown here. I do see Darrell from Georgia is on the line, but I want to make sure we get through a couple things on Raw and SmackDown that are pretty big to discuss. On Raw this past week, we had a Seth Rollins interview. Braun Strowman beating down both sets of tag team champions after that, enraged from his Universal title loss the night before. The OC defeated the Viking Raiders and Cedric Alexander. Glenn Jacobs, the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, won and lost the 24/7 title over the course of this show. Baron Corbin defeated Chad Gable in the King of the Ring finals. Maria had her gender reveal party and accused Ricochet of being the father of her baby. Mike Kanellis then came out and lost to Ricochet. Rusev returned, and he as well beat Mike Kanellis. Then we had Rey Mysterio defeating Cesaro. A backstage Authors of Pain interview certainly painted them in a different light than we are used to seeing them. Sasha Banks and Bayley defeated Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. Lacey Evans defeated Dana Brooke, and Seth Rollins defeated Bobby Roode. The Fiend ended up coming out and beating up Kane, who came out to save Seth Rollins from a beatdown from Roode and Ziggler. This coming week on Raw, we have a Fatal 5-Way to determine who will challenge for the Universal title the next week. Those involved include Rey Mysterio, Ricochet, AJ Styles, Bobby Roode, and Shinsuke Nakamura. So an interesting five there. We also have an all-new Firefly Funhouse, and it will be a King of the Ring rematch when Baron Corbin takes on Chad Gable. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I've made my feelings very clear on this on social media, so I won't spend a lot of time hemming and hawing here, is the King of the Ring finals and Baron Corbin defeating Chad Gable. What did you think of that that decision there to not pay off the Gable storyline of him overcoming the odds here with a win in the King of the Ring finals?
You know, maybe I'm thinking too subjectively here, but Gable, especially with the storyline, just has not been doing it for me. Yeah, sure, I've enjoyed his matches in the past, but his character, almost non-existent character, just really was not lighting me on fire, especially in comparison to some alternate options like an Andrade or a Ricochet as potential winners or at least semifinalists. So when it came down to just those two, I was happy to see Corbin get the win, almost to, you know, he's got so many accolades over his career, the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, retiring Kurt Angle, all these things that he can rattle off. But he had just been a 3-month-long loser against Seth Rollins, so this is something that can breathe life into his validity again. So I was at least pleased with that for the Corbin character. But I personally was not displeased that the Gable thing, at least as of yet, didn't go anywhere, that it didn't get blown off with a King of the Ring victory. Because I think I'd be looking at King Gable and just thinking, like, why didn't I just go with Ricochet, man? So I'm not crying any tears over it.
The thing to me, and the thing that I've argued over a couple weeks here is, you know, this doesn't change Corbin. You know, Corbin is, and you mentioned that he's been losing lately a little bit, and maybe this will vault him into the next tier, but, you know, it's not going to get him into the main events or anything like that. So to me, this does nothing for Baron Corbin. He's going to be at the same level he was before this win. And yet, for Chad Gable, this could have been really a big jumping off point. He'd been collecting wins. The crowd was really beginning to react to him. I mean, they were full behind him by the end of this match, which, by the way, was a really good match. And I don't think it was just Gable. You know, I'll give credit to Corbin here on this one, that he held up his end, I think, pretty well. But WWE, you know, part of the problem with them is not giving the fans the full story, the beginning, the middle, and the end. And they gave the sort of the beginning with Chad Gable. They gave the middle with him where he's trying to overcome the odds and trying to show others who think that because he's small that he can't do it, that he in fact can. And everything in the storyline, everything in commentary was building to Chad Gable winning here. And then he loses. And there's no babyface payoff. There's no happy ending. You know, he'll probably beat Baron Corbin this Monday on Raw. But, like, who cares at this point? You know, you've proven that Gable can't win the big one. He can't win in the King of the Ring finals. You know, it was just really disappointing that WWE had an opportunity to really make a new babyface here, one that could mean something. And I'm not saying Gable needed to walk around with the crown and the scepter and all that stuff. He could kind of poo-poo that and say, look, I don't need that. I've won, and I'm ready to go on to bigger and better things. I've proven that size doesn't matter and all that stuff, and now he's got the crowd behind him. And, you know, you could feel the air going out of the arena there with him losing. So I thought that this was a big missed opportunity by WWE to really pay off a full story of having the babyface win the big one, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, well, you talked me into it. Like I said, I was thinking too subjectively about Gable, and I even though the brackets weren't aligned this way, I just tried to put Ricochet in that same spot because I felt like they were telling a story of overcoming guys that are much bigger than him with Ricochet, and now he's just fighting Mike Kanellis randomly on Raw instead of being King Ricochet. So when I think of it that way, I can at least say that when it came down to these two, I was looking back at how excited I was about the tournament at the beginning and even through the first round of it, and how my excitement diminished as it went on. And it feels now that it's all said and done like a less significant tournament. So I think you absolutely have a point there.
On SmackDown, The New Day defeated The Revival and Randy Orton. Brock Lesnar made a surprise appearance on SmackDown, challenging Kofi Kingston for the title. That will take place on the first episode of SmackDown on Fox. Michael Cole did an interview with Rowan. Shinsuke Nakamura attacked Mustafa Ali before their match. Kevin Owens took a seat at ringside, and Shane McMahon was served papers by Owens, who was suing Shane for wrongful termination and said when he wins the lawsuit, he will fire Shane McMahon. Charlotte defeated Sasha Banks by disqualification when Bayley interfered. Carmella came to Charlotte's aid. Chad Gable destroyed Baron Corbin's throne and all of his, I guess, King of the Ring attachments there. Heavy Machinery defeated the B-Team. Daniel Bryan did an interview, and Harper and Rowan attacked Reigns and Bryan in the main event segment. I was on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Tuesday discussing this episode of SmackDown in depth, so I won't talk a lot about this here, but obviously the big news, Tom, is Brock Lesnar coming out and challenging Kofi Kingston for the WWE title. You know, this kind of seems, I mean, just like we talked about Matt Riddle being a no-brainer victory over Killian Dane, it feels like that's the case with Brock Lesnar over Kofi Kingston as well, so that Brock can hold the title during the early days of the SmackDown on Fox era. So I'll ask you the same question I asked about Dane and Riddle. Is there a chance that Kofi Kingston could somehow, if not beat Brock Lesnar, then maybe more likely survive Brock Lesnar, survive that match with the title, whether it's a disqualification or a no contest, and then be forced to defend it at the next pay-per-view or on another show?
I think if there's any shred of a chance that he survives with the title, it's with some kind of interference from New Day, but I would not, I'm not going to put my money on that. I think we're looking at a Brock victory here. And this made me feel real, real silly for predicting Randy Orton to win at Clash of Champions, because all along I've been one of the many people saying, like, of course they're going to want to put the title back on Brock when they go to Fox. And here we are. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course Kofi was going to retain at Clash. So Brock could go over him. And, you know, I think it's smart, because while a lot of quote unquote hardcore fans don't care for Brock, he is the top drawing wrestler in the business. So I think it's wise to put him in the position. And if they still want to keep Kofi in the main event, I think we're really, really primed here. I've been expecting it one way or another for Kofi to continue to try to vie for the title, have Brock continue to hold it, and then have Kofi win his signature match that he never wins, the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, he's become known for his Royal Rumble performances, but included in none of them is actually winning it. So, yeah, that's something that was floated on the post show that I did with Wade. That's a similar scenario to that. So we'll have to see how that plays out, but it gives something for everyone who's plugging, everybody on Fox who's plugging this first episode of SmackDown on Fox, now plugging Kofi Kingston and Brock Lesnar in a singles match. And, you know, that's something you heard all weekend on College Football on Fox. And so that's really interesting to see now them getting down to plugging a specific match for SmackDown on Fox, and Fox putting the full weight of their network behind this episode. So we have a Twitter question. You can follow me at Greg M. Parks, by the way, on Twitter. And we'll get to this before we get to Darrell, who's faithfully hanging on hold. This is from Michael from Memphis. He says, with Stone Cold Kevin Owens, The Fiend as Mankind, and Strowman and Reigns as Big Show and Undertaker, respectively, how long before we are through this being a mediocre PG retread of the Attitude Era? And what is the future for NXT if AEW signs people straight to their main roster for more money and exposure? I get Stone Cold Kevin Owens, although Stone Cold never kowtowed to authority like Kevin Owens has been the last few months. The Fiend is Mankind, I definitely get. Strowman and Reigns is Big Show and Undertaker, I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I think Big Show and Strowman have a lot more in common than Undertaker and Reigns, but okay. I never saw this, Tom, as a retread of the Attitude Era. This is new to me. I never thought of it that way. I mean, are you able to make the connections between wrestlers now and wrestlers from the Attitude Era? And is there a feeling that you get that WWE is just, you know, making copies of Xeroxes of copies of those wrestlers that were successful in the past?
Yeah, no more so than any other time, I don't think. I think, like you said, with Owens, for better or for worse, he's definitely not a Xerox copy of Stone Cold. You know, the characters are different enough. I think they've been careful with their implementation of legend talents, and you look at Bray Wyatt inheriting the Mandible Claw, and every time he uses it, we can now think back to when he attacked Mick Foley, and I think it's pretty effective every time he uses it. You know, not only does it look right for his character to be jamming his fingers down in the mouth of his opponent, holding them down while he's writhing around in his strobe lights, but it also invokes when he took down the hardcore legend Mick Foley with Mick Foley's own move. So I think with that very specific example, it's successful. And with other ones, yeah, I don't think it's easy to draw the lines, and the lines are definitely there, but not in a particularly detrimental way. You know, like you look at a Becky Lynch, and I think comparing her to Stone Cold is just going to hurt her. Comparing anybody to Stone Cold is going to hurt them, because Stone Cold was, I mean, that was absolute lightning in a bottle that won't be replicated in the exact same way. So I think there are enough differences there. And then we've got the NXT AEW thing, if we want to roll into that.
Yeah. The question is, what's the future for NXT if AEW signs people straight to their main roster for more money and exposure? First of all, it's no more exposure anymore, because with NXT on USA, I mean, that's the same amount of viewership basically as TNT. So, and now NXT is basically a main roster product now that they have cable
yep.
television on a, on USA Network. There's really not a difference between NXT and AEW to the point where you would say, yeah, man, AEW is on a much higher pedestal than NXT. Certainly AEW has money, with the Khan family behind it, but you know, this isn't going to be a situation where AEW wildly throws money at everybody and overpays by, you know, 50% its entire roster. It's not going to happen. So I don't know that how big they're going to build their roster. And, you know, they may have come close or reached their roster limit of how many guys they're comfortable utilizing on that roster. So it's not like WWE where they'll sign guys just to keep them away from others and hide them in NXT or hide them in somewhere else. I don't think AEW is going to be doing that, because they just don't have the number of platforms that WWE has to utilize guys with. So I really don't see this being an issue. I think there will still be competition between WWE and AEW to sign people from the independents or to sign people when contracts come up. And by that, it'll be NXT vying for some of that talent. But I don't think it's going to be AEW having this huge advantage over NXT or WWE.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it comes down to WWE's resources. And I referenced that before, coming from the top with NXT drawing from what sounded to me like main roster equipment, where they brought down the technical stuff for the sound system and the mics and whatnot. But now we're talking about from the other side of it, the Performance Center. They're going to keep on doing what they're doing. And they have plenty of people who came there as non-wrestlers, like a Daniel Vido, who was a rugby player, or Amari Palmer, the football player, who are training there now. Daniel Vido has been working the Coconut Loop recently, so he's making progress. And we've seen that throughout NXT's history. And yeah, we've seen, especially more recently, yes, independent wrestlers signed and not too much done with them, if anything, like a Deonna Purrazzo or a Shane Strickland, for example. But again, I keep on using this phrase, but those are still cards that WWE can play. And I think they have that deep well and that practiced routine that they go through on a daily basis, whereas AEW is so new and they're drawing from the independent scene. And don't get me wrong, I think highly about plenty of people on the AEW roster, but I continue to think about that novelty effect. Both promotions have a big novelty effect right now, but once that novelty wears off, I think that AEW has a steeper hill to climb because NXT is more tried and true in what they do and how they bring talent up. I mean, it's very rare that we get an episode of NXT that we can complain about more than we can praise. So fans that go back with it, it has a lot of equity in that case as well.
All right, let's go to Darrell from Georgia to close out the show. Darrell, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Not too much. How you guys doing today? And how's the mania down there in Jacksonville, Greg?
Well, Minshew Mania has gripped the entire Jaguars fan base. I'm much further down in Florida and Naples than Jacksonville, but even being so far away, I can feel the excitement that's gripping Jacksonville. It's resonating down here all the way in the southern part of Florida. So it's nice to be excited about a quarterback again. I'll say that.
We're close to Halloween, so we're going to see a lot of mustaches out there, I guess, with Jaguar jerseys.
Yeah, I seriously, let me tell you, I've got a goatee, and I've seriously considered shaving into a mustache, but I'm not there yet. I don't look great in a stash. My mustaches last a very short amount of time because they don't look great on me, so certainly not the Minshew level of look. So that makes come in time. Maybe if the Jaguars make the playoffs or something like that, maybe it'll come. But, yeah, very exciting time.
Okay. Now, on to wrestling. I heard you guys speaking earlier about who should be the number one contender match that they have, and should it be on the first two-hour-long show for NXT. I had an idea that I wanted to throw at you guys. If they do have it the first night on there, and this pertaining to Velveteen and how that finish took place and how they kind of, even though it was shenanigans, they kind of put him looking a little strong because it took so much to put him down. Do you guys think that that was a way to maybe get show Dream as a star and move him away from the North American Championship and have a viable reason why he would want to go after Adam Cole since Dream do stomp to his own beat?
Yeah, the title picture could get crowded really quickly, Tom, if Matt Riddle defeats Killian Dane and he has a claim to the NXT title. You've got Velveteen Dream, who if he ends up going away from the North American title, as you know, as Darrell suggests, and he aims higher as a character who catches on the USA Network, maybe with a wider audience. All of a sudden, you've got three viable contenders now. I mean, you could always have Matt Riddle defeat Adam Cole for the title and have Dream challenge challenge Riddle somewhere down the line. But it's hard to imagine Adam Cole not being in the NXT title picture. So, you know, you've got these three really strong wrestlers, strong personalities. Do you think at some point it's going to be a challenge to kind of arrange them in places where you're taking advantage of them?
Yeah, those are multiple branching scenarios that at first blush all sound like they could work, and they have enough history behind them that I could absolutely see Dream trying to reinsert himself for any number of reasons. The fact that he's gone over Riddle in the past, the fact that he is upset with Cole, or even the fact that he is one of those characters that can lean face and heel. He's always been popular with the crowd, but he's one of those people that you can just tweak from storyline to storyline. You know, a tweener. He works both ways. So, yeah, I think there's absolutely some potential there that would be very interesting. I think the thing I agree with most is that they know that Velveteen Dream is one of their biggest stars who has some of the most potential. It is no small secret. So yeah, I think that would be an appealing direction. And Roddy definitely would not be starved for challengers because we were talking about Pete Dunne earlier, and Pete Dunne has definitely been keeping that North American title in his sights. So I think that that could be maybe Roddy's next feud if he doesn't go right to a return with a Dream.
Darrell, back to you for follow-up and your second question.
Yes, I felt like because it was really even though everybody in the Undisputed Era jumped in, I felt like they put emphasis on Adam Cole with the super kick costing Dream the title, and I always thought that there would be some way for Dream, a reason for Dream to come back out there, and possibly they have that number one contender match next week, then have the title match the week after, because this will be another question for you guys. Wouldn't you want to have that match early so you can display or show the world your big bad guy that's on the show, who's the number one bad guy, and let him have an awesome match, probably with Matt Riddle? And, yeah, you'll cost that loss for Matt Riddle, but you have a lot of time to build him up, because I'm thinking that you wouldn't want Adam Cole to lose that title till around Mania time, maybe, or something like that, just so you can build him up to be a star, since this is your first time on television and you want to at least build somebody up to be a big baddie.
Yeah, Tom, what do you think about that?
I think you make a fair point. On one hand, I think that they could do that same thing with Cole without putting the title on the line, and they could have him face somebody else if they wanted to draw out the Riddle storyline. On the other hand, if they do want to risk, I mean, this is, again, assuming that Riddle is going to win this match on Wednesday. If they do want to risk a Matt Riddle loss, and like you said, Darrell, they can absolutely have some shenanigans in there yet again to make the Undisputed Era seem untouchable and really get them over as these nasty heels who won't give up their titles in a fair way. We also have the return of Ciampa incoming, and Ciampa has been putting out there that he wants to come in and get revenge against Adam Cole for Adam Cole beating his buddy that he reunited with, Gargano. So assuming that's not just social media hype and they're going to bring that into the storyline, that is the other thing. That's the only other thing that gives me pause when I say that Matt Riddle's definitely going to be the next champion, because Ciampa is there working that program from the sidelines, and he's not too far away from returning.
Yeah, Ciampa adds a completely different dimension to this. I'd forgotten about him and how close he is to return. I think, you know, if we're talking about, and I mentioned earlier, you know, Cole is so inextricably linked with the NXT title, it's hard to see him doing something that's not involved with it. But if you have Riddle defeat Adam Cole for the title and then have, you know, Riddle versus Dream, you could do Ciampa versus Adam Cole as a grudge match and have it still seem like a very big deal, even if Cole isn't involved in the title picture. So that could be one way they go with it, although we do know how much Ciampa values that title, so it also makes sense to make that a title feud as well. So, yeah, we're going to see how that lines up, especially when Ciampa comes back. A lot of balls up in the air on this one. Darrell, follow-up for that, and your last question for us tonight.
Yeah, because you have so many challenges for Adam Cole to chase him down. That's why I thought Riddle, especially since you would be giving away, he would be just leaving a feud that he's really, even if he beats Killian Dane this Wednesday, he's still, you could say, like 1-1 or 2-1, because Killian Dane, you could say, possibly have two wins on him just in that feud, and that would be just like Candice LeRae leaving behind her feud with Io Shirai. So that's why I was thinking that you can possibly sacrifice that loss, because you're going to build him back up and you have so many challenges. Now, I know you guys are speaking about NXT, but we had something on New Japan today, earlier today. I wanted to ask a question about how do you guys feel about Naito losing the title, and it seemed like everybody wants to do what he stated first and be the first double champion. And how do you feel about Jay White winning that title?
Yeah, I think this may have surprised some people because of Naito's claim that he wants to be a double champion. And I think while I don't think that scenario would have come to fruition, I think people would have liked to have seen him have the opportunity to challenge Okada or a champion down the line for that heavyweight championship while he was IC champion, or while he was champion here. So, yeah, Jay White winning the title was a surprise in that regard. But, you know, I said earlier, it wasn't a surprise in that, you know, Jay White was booked really strong in the last half of the G1. He is somebody who I think was not, but, and I think I even brought this up to when we were doing this show on New Japan. I didn't think New Japan really capitalized on that momentum he had coming out of the G1 in the follow-up shows. So for him to get the title here, I think is a pretty big deal. And, you know, where that leads us going forward remains to be seen. But, yeah, it's certainly an interesting result, Darrell, and something to watch going forward with Jay White being the champion now. And Naito, where does he go from here now that he's no longer champion? But yeah, it's interesting. Darrell, appreciate your call as always on this Sunday night and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. You guys have a great night also.
Thanks so much.
Darrell.
So, Tom, we've reached the end of our time here. Really enjoyed having you on tonight for the first time. You passed with flying colors, by the way, in case you're wondering. It's a very, very difficult grading system for my co-host here on Wrestling Night in America, but you have passed.
Okay.
Let people know where they can read or listen to work on the Torch and where they can reach you on social media.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. So as Greg mentioned earlier, I am the co-host on PWT Talks NXT, which was the Thursday live cast as the wrestling shows are shifting around. We're shifting around. I think that we're going to be recording on Thursdays now, but it's not completely set in stone. This coming week, we definitely are recording on Thursday, so you can expect our show on Friday, and we'll be popping up on Wade's NXT post show, I'm sure. I did do the NXT tapings reports, and those don't happen anymore. So every once in a while, I get to make it out to an indie show, and I cover that for the Torch as well. It's particularly interesting doing that here in the Orlando area, since these people are wrestling so close to the PC, and there's usually somebody from WWE in the audience checking them out. And I am on Twitter at Tom Staup, TOMSTOUP. I love talking wrestling with you guys. You can get at me there. And I am tweeting from inside the taping, stuff that maybe you don't see on TV, definitely stuff like what the dark matches are. And so at Tom Staup on Twitter, follow me there.
So the tweets are coming from inside the arena is the new, the phone call is coming from inside the house. I think so. We appreciate those tweets. Always look forward to them. And Tom Staup, thanks for joining me here on Wrestling Night in America. Hope to have you along again with us some other time.
Thanks so much, Greg. Looking forward to it.
And you can look forward to another episode of Wrestling Night in America right here, same time next week. We will talk Hell in a Cell. I believe it'll be the go-home show for Hell in a Cell. So we'll have a new co-host from the PW Torch family joining us for that episode next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.